Buy low, sell high. Very easy to say, but not always so easy to do. For example, high interest rates are hurting the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices in a lot of markets are falling, even for many of the best assets. So it's no wonder the Fundrise flagship fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its $1 billion real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise flagship fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/pockets. Fundrise.com/pockets. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise flagship fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.
The dream of owning a vacation home can be daunting. From finding the best guests, to the maintenance, to organizing the cleaners after every guest day. With Vacasa, they make that dream into a reality. As a full-service vacation home management company with vacation homes in key destinations across the U.S., they know a thing about how to make owning a vacation home easy and profitable. On top of proactive property maintenance visits by professional local teams, a hospitality-driven booking platform, and around-the-clock support, Vacasa earns homeowners an average of 20% more revenue from their vacation homes. Vacasa is always thinking of ways to simplify the vacation home owning experience by putting your home to work for you. If you're looking to make more from your vacation home, work with the reliable property manager, and finally have peace of mind, partner with Vacasa at vacasa.com/biggerpockets. That's vacasa.com/biggerpockets.
Top real estate investors love to talk about how they save so much on taxes. But how are they able to build rental property empires while skirting Uncle Sam? 1031 exchanges. 1031 exchanges allow you to defer capital gains taxes while you sell an investment property, exchanging your old property for a bigger, better one and avoiding the tax man while you do it. And that's where First American Exchange Company comes in. They're the leaders in 1031 exchanges. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting, First American Exchange can help you with simple rental property exchanges, complex commercial real estate investments, reverse exchanges, and more. Don't let your taxes eat into your profits. Visit First American Exchange Company at firstexchange.com. Or call them at 800-556-2520. That's firstexchange.com or 800-556-2520. Keep your money in your pocket and propel your portfolio further at firstexchange.com. First American Exchange Company does not provide tax or legal advice. Consult your financial, real estate, tax, or legal advisor about your circumstances. First American Exchange Company. Safe, smart, secure.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to On the Market. I'm your host, Dave Meyer, joined today by Henry Washington, James Daynard, and Kathy Fecky. How are the three of you?
Great.
Doing good.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
We have a great show for you today. We're going to talk all about some of the regional differences in the housing market right now. As you probably know, there are huge differences from market to market, state to state, and each one of us is going to represent one region of the country. We're going to talk about some of the strengths, weaknesses, tactics, and strategies that work within each of those regions. So definitely stick around for that. But first, we do have a bit of housekeeping. If you listen to episode 100, you know that we did a bit of a contest. We asked everyone, all of our faithful listeners, to share their favorite On the Market episode. And if they did that and screenshotted it, there was a winner going to be announced who got to pick a host to have a coaching call with. And we do have a winner. The winner for our contest is Dominic Grosso, whose favorite episode was number 97, which is basically me just rambling about the dollar dominance and reserve currencies for a while. But that was his favorite episode. I actually really enjoyed making that. So congratulations to Dominic. We'll have to have you pick one of our hosts for a coaching call. And thank you for listening to On the Market. All of you who participated in it, we really appreciate it.
I'm sure this was in no way, shape, form, or fashion rigged that the person who won picked an episode that Dave just talked the whole time and Dave picked the winner, right? That's
I mean, the it's so weird. The only ones that were nominated were just me talking all by myself. None of you, no one even mentioned any of you guys in any of the
That's because we're just your backup dancers, Dave.
No, not at all. Actually, we got so many different ones. It was pretty awesome to see how just everyone had a different favorite episodes, which I think is a sign we're doing something right.
That means we're doing good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, congrats to Dominic. Before we get into our regional discussion, we are going to play a little bit of a game, too, to test everyone's knowledge of the housing market right now, because things are changing so quickly. So I'm going to have you guys guess some housing market stats. They're pulled from the NAR report, National Association of Realtors, reflecting on March 2023 data. And just so everyone knows, we are recording this in May, but, you know, good quality housing market data is usually like 6 weeks in the past. So that's what we're looking at here. All right. So I don't think you guys know these questions. So I'm going to start with an easy one. James, what was the median home price for existing home sales in March of 2023 across the entire country?
I should know this. I'm thinking it's around 440.
440. Okay. Kathy?
I already know this, so you should. I have to pass. I would be cheating.
All right. Henry?
Yeah, I was going to say about 423,000. That's the number that popped in my brain.
Okay. Well, you both shot high. It was actually 375,000. So it's actually come down a little bit. I think it was close to four when it peaked like last June, and then it's come down. So that is pretty good. Actually, Henry and I had a conversation. He was talking about how the combination of slowly declining home prices and modestly declining mortgage rates have steadily improved affordability in the U.S. since October, which is encouraging.
Can I just make one comment?
Please.
When I started, investing, it was 124,000. And so that was about, 20 years ago. But the median price was 124,000. So it's really like almost tripled. And I want people to really get that, because lately there's all this talk that inflation is something new. Guys, it's not new. It's here. It's here to stay. It's been here. And just in the time that I've been investing, which granted, okay, 2 decades, shut up. But with that.
You brought it up.
You will be there too someday. And just at a time when they weren't talking about inflation, these home prices almost tripled. So that's why I am on a rampage to let people know, like, if you don't get in the market, it's going to just keep getting harder. It's not going to get easier.
That does seem to be the case for sure. All right. So our second question, going on our theme of regions of the United States, what percentage of home sales occurred in the western region of the U.S. in March of 2023? Kathy, what do you think?
Oh, yeah, I do not know that one. Okay, so I have to guess. I am going to say a third.
Okay. 33%.
Such a bad guess.
Henry?
I'm going to go with 16%.
16%. And James?
17.4.
Whoa.
I don't
know
why.
Did you guys cheat?
No, that just
did. What are you guys cheat?
No, that just popped into my brain.
I was about to say Henry was so close, but then James, you just totally won up to him. It was 18%. And you just said 17.4.
You just $1'd me. $1, Bob.
I promise you, that was a total guess.
Go buy a lotto ticket.
Totally just pull that out.
All right. Well, Henry, I'll give you a chance to redeem yourself, because this is sort of a play in to our regional conversation. So we're just talking about the volume of home sales and sort of where home activity and purchasing is going on right now. So let's talk about the South, which is what Henry is going to be representing. What percent of home sales were in the South in, I don't know, March of 2023? Is that what we're talking about? Yes.
I'm going to go with 37%.
Okay. Kathy?
Oh, I'm obviously just really right on this one. So I'm just going to follow Henry and say 31.
All right, James, I'm giving you another chance to one up Henry or Kathy.
23.4.
I think it's closer to 40. I did it wrong.
It was 47%.
Wow. Was right,
yeah. Half. Yeah.
Of the homes sold in the United States in March of 2023 was in the South. Comparatively, the Northeast was just 12% and the Midwest was 23%.
I forgot the migration, man. Everybody moved to Florida and Texas.
Yeah, yep. It doesn't seem like it's slowing down, even though home sales on a whole are a fraction of what they were about a year ago. Then, the concentration is still in the South. We are going to get into these regional differences in just a minute, where Henry's going to be representing and sharing some information about the South with us. Kathy will be talking about the Midwest. I will be talking about the Northeast, and James will be talking about the West. So you all can get a better sense and understanding of what's going on in each of these regions and how to adjust your strategies and tactics accordingly. But first, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages. Until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right, get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
Spring into healthier habits this season with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Their fresh, never-frozen meals are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. It's delicious without the dishes. With more daylight, sometimes it can be easy to lose track of time and get behind on things like dinner prep, but not anymore. Factor's 35 weekly options include different diets like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or vegan and veggie meals, and they keep you fueled and feeling good no matter your schedule. If you're looking for gourmet meals, Factor has those too. You can try meals with premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, and broccolini. You can customize your meals with the flexibility to get as little or as much as you need. And discover more than 60 add-ons you can have every week, like breakfast or on-the-go lunch, snacks, beverages. So no matter what, you're always eating right. Head to factormeals.com/market50 and use code MARKET50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code MARKET50, MARKET50, at factormeals.com/market50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
You're trying to close on your next rental, so why is your insurance company dragging its feet? With long lead times and never-ending paper forms, it's no wonder it takes forever to finally get a policy. Modern investors deserve better. They deserve Steadily.com. At Steadily.com, you'll get fast, affordable landlord insurance available online 24/7 in just a few clicks. You can even get next-day coverage, which takes just minutes, by the way, to obtain. And you can do it all from your phone. Steadily was founded by landlords who created insurance products tailored to the unique needs of this industry. It's their sole focus, and that's why landlords nationwide consistently rate them 4.8 out of 5 stars. So whether you've got a single-family, short-term, or multifamily portfolio, Steadily.com can secure the best coverage at the best price to protect your properties. Discover how Steadily can save you both time and money on your rental property insurance. Visit Steadily.com for a commitment-free quote tailored to your needs today.
For our regional discussion, we are going to start with me. We decided we were going to go east to west for some reason. I think Henry said something about Oregon Trail, so that's what we're going to be doing. and we are going to start in the Northeast. Basically, I wasn't exactly sure what states belong in the Northeast, so I kind of just made this up. But I picked, when I did the analysis, I picked New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, and Delaware. So I think that's New England plus, I don't think New York, New Jersey, and Delaware are technically New England, but I threw them in anyway. And so basically what we're seeing here in these 9 states, and it comes into about 56 metro areas is what I looked at. This is a spoiler. We'll have to confirm this. I think the Northeast probably has the most stable or maybe even the highest growth potential of any region in the United States right now. The indicators suggest pretty strong growth for the Northeast right now. So what I'm seeing is of the 56 markets that I analyzed, 46% of them are up year over year. And so that represents a very large percentage of all of the markets. When you look at inventory and you're trying to understand what's going on in the future, like is inventory going up? 95% of the housing markets in the Northeast still have inventory below pre-pandemic levels. And the average days on market is 32%, which sounds like a lot compared to the last couple of years, but is a relatively normal level. So before I go on, I'm curious what you think. Like, just based on those stats, how would you evaluate the Northeast as a housing market region right now?
Well, the livability and affordability has been driving that pretty heavily, for what I understand. I think there's definitely still growth. I mean, what we're seeing is the affordability markets, the ones that, I mean, I guess it depends on what segment of the Northeast you're really talking about. The more affordable quality of living small towns seem to be growing rapidly still. But, you know, I think you got to really break it down into submarkets. I think they're going to continue to grow because what we're seeing is affordability is in high demand. I mean, if 46% of all the sales are happening in the South, well, the median home price is a lot lower in the South. And so those Northeast markets, if they're in the same pricing, you know, they're going to have the same growth potential as well.
James, I couldn't agree more, because when I was doing this research, what I was seeing is I looked at yearly data and I looked at monthly data. And when you look at the monthly data, most submarkets across the country are seeing home values increase, right? Even slight levels. And when you look at the yearly data, when we get to talking about the South, I'll talk more in detail about that. You can see in the South, in the suburbs, and the more rural communities, that values have gone up. And so if you see that trend playing itself out across the Northeast, you're finding it, I think it's a good opportunity to go and you look at property that are surrounding some of these major cities, and you can get in now and then start to see and start to get a benefit from some of the increases that are happening. Slightly month over month.
One of the things that I've noticed is that when you look at the Northeast, obviously it's a big region. Like, per James's point, a lot of the rural areas, they're not rural, they're cities near more rural parts of the country, are seeing the strongest growth. So when you look at places like Portland, Maine, or Burlington, Vermont, or Concord, New Hampshire, they tend to be a little bit performing a little bit better. Actually, Rochester, New York, where I went to college, has a median home price of about $207,000. So that's, you know, a little bit more than half of the national average. So talk about affordability. Rochester is the number one market in the whole country for something called the sale to list ratio, which basically is how much over asking price properties are going for. In Rochester, they're still going for 7% over asking price. That's like what everything in the West was doing during the middle of the pandemic. So there's still markets in the Northeast that are affordable in the less densely populated parts of the Northeast that are still in like full on bidding wars.
Yeah, and I think it comes down to like it's that common sense affordability. Like if you play the impact on rates when median home prices are a lot lower, right? Like if you're looking at a mortgage rate that's 7% today on $250,000, that's a payment of $1,600 a month. At 5%, it's $1,342. So in the consumer's mind, people have been spending money like crazy the last 2 years. It's just $250 more a month for your payment. Whereas if you do it on a $2 million house, that's a $3,000 to $4,000 a month more increase. And so these affordable markets are just grabbing people because it's that perception of money or perception of what they have to spend, even though it's a percentage of income when you're working in those areas, it's still that hard reality that I have to pay $3,000 more a month for this house in a more expensive market, whereas in a cheaper market, $250 doesn't really seem like much. You can cut out your DoorDash and get it there. And so it's just one of those things where I think those markets, that's why the markets are driving.
Your DoorDash is only $250 a month?
No, my DoorDash is out of control.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Cutting out DoorDash.
Yeah. Whoa.
Come on. Let's make some real sacrifices.
You cut out a lot before that. Well, one of the interesting dynamics here is obviously the affordability level of some of these, you know, I'm not going to say like, they're like tertiary cities. They're not as common cities. Like we're not talking about New York and Boston, you know, here, but a lot of the other big cities in the Northeast, like Philadelphia, are relatively affordable. For example, Providence, Rhode Island, places in Connecticut are all relatively affordable. But what seems to be really driving the sort of some of these price bidding wars and sort of keeping the prices up. And this is a national phenomenon, but I think it is most pronounced in the Northeast, is just the lack of new listings. And this is how many people put their properties for sale. I looked this up in Burlington, Vermont. There, the amount of new listings was down 68% year over year. 68%.
Wow.
It's just unbelievable. So even last year, when there was very few things on the market, if there were for every three homes that were on the market last year, there's now only one of them. And that's true in Concord, New Hampshire, Portland, Maine, Allen, Pennsylvania, Bangor, Maine, all over the place. We're seeing this really interesting dynamic. And so, of course, things could change. But the way the data reads right now is that these parts of the country are going to have a very hot housing market this summer.
Yeah, it's always confused me why the Northeast was considered affordable, because I would always consider it, like you said, Dave, like what exactly is the Northeast? I would always consider it New York, Boston, you know, some of these really expensive places. Like, how could that be affordable? But everything around it is so cheap when you bring in Pennsylvania or, you know, the outskirts of New York. And you've got this pretty massive baby boomer population that doesn't have to live in those big cities anymore. They can choose to retire. Not everybody wants to retire in Florida. So there are a lot of affordable places outside of those big cities. And what I love about that East Coast area is it's very Euro in the sense of travel. You can jump on a train and be in those cities pretty easily. Just get out of the train and you're downtown. You don't have to drive. You know, we don't have that in the West very much. It's terrible. You have to drive everywhere. So, you know, people can still live in an affordable place, but get into the city with those trains.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last thing we'll say before we get out of here is there is sort of this narrative that people are leaving the Northeast. And there are certainly parts, like New York City has lost some population. I'm not sure about Boston off the top of my head, but there are parts of the Northeast, especially like New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine, that are growing really quickly. Parts of Massachusetts are growing really quickly, too. So, you know, we're doing this regionally because we can't talk about every individual housing market one by one. You know, what we're talking about here is mostly the non-New York, non-Boston parts of the Northeast. So that's if you want to know more about the bigger cities, you might want to jump into that. Okay, Henry, let's move on. Let's talk about what's going on in the South.
Yeah, man, this was cool research to be able to look at. And it's kind of surprising, but not really, because when you think about the South, what I did is I looked at home value increases and decreases, and I looked at it from a yearly perspective, and then from a monthly perspective to see what the differences were. So when you look at the South and you look at the values from a yearly perspective, so looking at December 22 to March 23. And I kind of got to cheat on this a little bit, because this is all information from Fortune, where we got to interview somebody just a couple of days ago, and we talked about this. So I was looking at that same data. If you look at housing markets, and what it did is it broke down the zip codes for each state, and then talked about what percentage of the state either saw increases or decreases. And so, looking at markets like Tennessee, 83% of the state saw prices increase from December 22nd to March 23. 83% of the state, only 17% saw a decrease. And when you're looking at what kind of a decrease, so you're seeing upwards of double digit sometimes returns, 11, 12, 13% increases, but only single digit decreases. And so the increases are much higher than the decreases, and most of the market is increasing. And when you look at within these states, which parts of the states are seeing the actual increases, it's the areas surrounding the major cities. So the 16 or 17% that saw a decrease, well, obviously those were going to be your Nashvilles and your Memphis, right? Because that's where most people either move to or are living. That's where most of the competition is. And so you're not seeing the same increases, but the surrounding zip codes, right? There was great opportunity there that people took advantage of. And now they're seeing their property values still go up in value, and you're seeing home prices on the rise in those areas. Same thing for Georgia. Georgia, 68% of the state saw price increase, and the highest was about 15% increase, whereas only 32% of the state saw a price decrease. And that low and the highest price decrease was only about 7%. And again, around Atlanta is where you're seeing that single digit kind of decline in some of the values. But areas around it, like the Macons and those sub zip codes around Atlanta, are doing really, really well as far as value is concerned. Texas, same thing, 63 on the increase, 37 on the decrease. Texas, in some areas of Texas, people saw values increase of 20%, 20, 23%
wow.
increases.
Jeez. Kathy's celebrating.
Florida was the only state in the South that kind of saw the opposite. So in Florida, 34% of the state saw an increase, where 66% saw a decrease. And so I think that has a lot to do with how many people migrated to Florida, how popular it became over that time period. And so you saw the metrics be a little different in Florida. But when you zoom in and you're only looking at the past month, so we're talking February to March data, there were only three submarkets in the whole South that saw a decline in price.
Whoa.
The Dallas submarket. And Dallas was really flat because it was only 0.01% of a decrease. San Antonio at 0.07 and Austin at 0.72% decrease.
Wow.
Everything else in the South saw an increase in value over the past month. And so I think this is obviously great news for people who bought in the areas surrounding those submarkets. But I think it's also good news for people that did buy in those markets, because I think if and when interest rates come down and buyer demand increases, the more metropolitan markets will start to see those increases as well.
I'm not surprised. I actually made a YouTube video today about Florida and how Florida, I've said this, I think, on the show. Every time I make lists like this that rank markets, Florida's like always the top five markets and the bottom five markets. It's just like,
that's so
there's
Florida.
No way to talk about Florida in a consistent way when it comes to the housing market. Like, everyone is just ridiculous and crazy. So I'm not surprised to hear that. But I guess the theme seems to be so far, both in my research into the Northeast, and what you're saying, Henry, is like it's the major metros that are really seeing adverse conditions, where any suburban, secondary, tertiary cities are still going strong as they have been for over the last, maybe not as strong as over the last few years, but are still, you know, progressing as you would expect during a normal housing market.
Yeah, I was just in Dallas yesterday before coming to Tennessee. And for our, you know, to meet with my partner there for our fund. And it's confusing because a lot of times you'll see data for a particular city and people will interpret that to mean the whole area. But, you know, what happened in Dallas is Dallas got really expensive. And obviously not as expensive as, you know, where I live in California or, you know, in Seattle or Phoenix, but it's gotten really expensive compared to what it has been in the past. So a lot of people just can't afford to live there anymore, and they're moving out to the suburbs. And that's where the massive growth is happening in so many markets. These cities that have been traditionally not too expensive to live in are now. And so the growth is moving out. And that's true for commercial property, too. Like, a lot of the office issues that we're hearing, those are downtown high-rise offices. But in the suburbs, you know, where you still want to get your nails done or get that massage or... get the drip thing that Jimmy has or whatever, anything that you can't outsource, you know, you got to go get it done. People living who are moving out of the cities also still need those things.
I mean, James hasn't come to him, though. James does not drive to his appointments. They come to him.
They advise me not to poke myself, so I just don't do that.
That's a really good point, though, Kathy. We really are talking in broad strokes here and trying to establish trends. But even within a state, even within a metro, there's going to be variances. And also worth mentioning that we are only talking about residential real estate here. At least me, I don't know about you guys. When I did I did not look at any commercial data.
But it's just important when you see these statistics, you know, to look deeper and say, are they talking about the metro, like the area, or are they talking about the city? And those are two very different things. And that's why it gets confusing, because you'll see Tampa, you know, sales down and higher inventory, but just go outside of Tampa. It's a different story because, again, Tampa got expensive. And a lot of people aren't moving from New York City to be in another city. You know, they're looking to be in an area where maybe they have a little bit more space, the suburbs. And there's not a lot of data so much on those, you know, suburb area, the suburban areas.
Well, Kathy, let's just stay with you. What's going on in the Midwest? And how did you define the Midwest? Because, like, what? I don't even know what that means.
I know. It's so funny. I've always questioned, like, I'm in Tennessee. I actually had to look it up. Turns out I'm not in the Midwest right now. I was going to say, yeah, I am, but
I'm
not.
Was that South Tennessee?
Yeah, it's considered South. At least somebody decided that. And I remember, you know, I work with a lot of teams in Ohio, and I always thought that they would be considered kind of Northeast, but they're considered Midwest, I think. So I don't know. It just, yeah, I don't know if it's so much geographic, but, you know, the headlines can be so confusing because you'll see a broad stroke of, you know, prices went down. But then when you dive into the regional data, the Midwest actually had sales down dramatically, 5.5%. Month over month, 17% year over year, which seems to be less than other places. But the median price went up 1.7% overall in the Midwest. Again, it's a big area. And why might that be? Well, I'll quiz you guys. What do you think the median price of a home is in the Midwest?
$297,200.
Ooh, that's a good guess.
I'm going to go like $192,000.
Good. I was going to go the other direction. I was going to say like $338,000.
I would have probably guessed what Henry said because we work in so many of those markets and buy in those markets, and it is, you know, cheap. But the median price is $273,000.
I'm buying a lottery.
James, you got to go to Vegas right now. Get on the plane.
Who wants to go right now? I need to buy 5 houses today. I'm on fire with numbers.
Chicago skewing the numbers there.
Yeah, probably.
And that's $100,000 less than the national. So, you know, basically, Lawrence Yan, the chief economist of NAR, put it really simply. And basically said, let me quote, home prices continue to rise in regions where jobs are being added. So that would be the South. That's what's happening there. And where housing is relatively affordable. So that's just to sum it up. It's just those things. When you have an interest rate hike, is it going to, you know, how differently is that? Is it going to affect people buying a $100,000 house versus a $1 million house? It's going to be very, very different. And the people on the West and the expensive markets, they were already stretched. You know, when you double the payment, there's just no way, not a chance. But, you know, could you handle the difference on a $100,000 house? Possibly. Not everyone. So, you know, that's, and then, of course, you've got people, these retirees and people who can work from anywhere who would just love to get into the game and can afford in those markets. So that's what the Midwest has for it. I'll add one thing. Muncie was up 8%. And I know Muncie really well because I'd lost my shirt in Muncie. We had an apartment there that had all kinds of problems.
Why in Muncie?
I know, right? It's outside of Indiana. It was a deal I should have never done. Don't even want to go into the details. That's for another day. But knowing that area so well, one of the issues was we had such a hard time renovating this apartment complex we bought. This city was tough on us. So I don't know if that's like keeping builders out, and that's why inventory is so low. That's part of the issue. Inventory is almost non-existent in Muncie. Maybe builders just aren't going there because there's not huge demand or because the city council's been tough on them. Whatever it is, inventory's low, and yet people still want to own a home.
Do you think also a lot of the development's not happening just because the replacement cost, you just can't build for the metrics? Like, I mean, if these, like, yeah, build costs are still up so much, it's going to be hard to build in some of these markets. If things are selling for $200-$300 a square foot, it's going to be hard to build underneath that. And so inventory's going to stay tight in those markets until the materials keep dropping.
Or until, yeah, some builders incentivized to go there. If you're a national builder, you're probably not going to Muncie.
It's just you, Kathy.
Just me.
All right. Well, with that, let's move on to our last region for today, which is the West, of course. And for that, we're going to go with James.
You know, I feel like with the West Coast, everyone is just hating on it like crazy. Probably because the last 9 months have been a little bit miserable. But I will say that I think that the West Coast is going to be the comeback kid of the year. There were some very interesting data points. What we're seeing in all the major metro areas, and actually the weird thing about the West Coast is a lot of the affordable markets are also following trend with the metro markets. Whereas, like, as we're looking in the Northeast, you're seeing things like you said, Portland, Maine's growing rapidly, you know, and then whereas in Washington right now, we're seeing like the outside, like in Seattle. Seattle is down roughly, I think it was about 9% year over year coming down. And this is right when we were peaking kind of on values right now. In a more affordable area like Spokane, it's down 11%. So it's not holding, that same story isn't holding true in the West Coast. But one interesting thing, and across the board on all the metro cities, you know, Los Angeles is down 4%, San Francisco's down 12%, Seattle's down 9%. These are big drops. And when you're dealing with $1 million to $2 million properties, that's a big, big deal. That's $200,000 to $400,000 they can drop when you start going above 10%. But there's some really interesting trends that are happening right now. And what I think we've seen is we saw in January of 2023, the West Coast kind of peaked in its worst conditions from what I'm seeing. And what we're seeing is there's three major things that have happened from this quarter to where we're at right now. And A, the median home price had dropped the most during that time across the board. But the biggest thing that I'm seeing, this is a huge indicator, is days on market. And if we look at Seattle, or I'm looking at or like in Los Angeles right now, in January, average days on market, the consumption rate jumped all the way up to almost 64 days. It has trended down to 44. So the market is consuming a lot faster. The properties are starting to be consumed. In Washington, this is a huge stat. It ballooned up to 28 days. And actually, 28 days isn't that long. If most investors should know, the average time to sell a house in history is 120 to 150 days. So that it's still a healthy market at that point. But at 28 days on market, we have now we are down to an average of 16 days on market.
What?
50% of the timing is gone, and we are seeing that in the market. Wow. And there's some really good trends going on right now in the West Coast. The home pricing in some of these stats, and these are the one things I don't like to go to. I like to watch the trends of the stats, but when you're reading the stats, you're kind of too late to the game already. And things are already changing differently. What a real life example that we just had is one of our clients sold a property 90 days ago within a tenth of a mile of a property that we just sold. Same house, same builder, same lot, same product, exact same finishes. It took them 60 days to sell these properties with a different broker at $599 90 days ago. We just listed one at $699 within walking distance. And it got bid up to $715.
Wow.
Model match products.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And so the trend, it's starting to, and these are really good trends. I don't get trapped on just the median home price and the percentages when I'm looking at buying. I'm looking at what is the market doing today. And what we are seeing in the West Coast across the board is all days on market are dropping in all major metro cities on the West Coast. So that means that buyers are starting to consume things again. And I really think that comes down to more like the mindset of the buyers is the West Coast buyers are a little bit more techie. They overthink things and they slow down. And now they're getting FOMO and they're jumping in rapidly.
James, and you mentioned that more affordable cities are not following the same trend as the rest of the country. What is like the price point of an affordable city in the West? Because from my understanding, everything's expensive.
Well, in like Spokane, Washington, the median home price in Spokane is like the next major city in Washington. Well, it's in eastern Washington, which is not, it's away from all the big metro. Costs about 40% less than Seattle on average. But the median home price was at $350,000 in Spokane right now.
Oh, okay.
And that was down 8.5% from where it was year over year. And so that's a lot of these affordable ones are still... I think it's more of a mindset of a state. They're going, everyone should freeze. And so it's like, just because the major metro in Washington is freezing up, it's kind of freezing up the markets across the board, but they're all following the same trends. The interesting thing is the days on market there also did the exact same thing as the major metro cities. So the affordable markets are moving with the metro, and those are things to watch.
There's actually quite a lot of affordable places, even in California, but you kind of have to live out of it, you know, out of the cities, all along Highway 5. You know, you're able to find deals along there in Modesto and probably parts of Stockton. You could go, I think, a great opportunity is Chico, California, because it's got a huge university, but prices there. But that's where my daughter bought her first home for $250,000, you know, just a couple of years ago. So it's not out of reach. And I think if you want to buy in a place like California, buy a school kind of out in the middle of nowhere somewhere. You know, makes a lot of sense. If you would love to be a landlord in California, where the landlord laws are, that's so exciting. But, you know, it'd be the same in any of those. The West is a big place, too. That's like, even if you cut the country up into four sections, you're still just averaging cities that are so completely different, because from a big city, just an hour inland could be very, very different pricing.
There's tons of affordability in California. It's just not in the, you know, the coastal cities, but you've got a whole Central Valley. I mean, I'm from Bakersfield. I just looked, the median sale price in Bakersfield is $358,000, right? That's an hour drive from LA. You look at places like Valencia, which is just 30 minutes outside of LA. You know, there's tons of people living in Valencia and commuting into LA. That place is growing and stretching, and you can get a home much more affordably there. You can also look down, you know, you've got Fresno and then all the way up into Northern California, Stockton, Sacramento. There's lots of places where you can find more affordable housing in California and kind of take advantage of some of these things James is talking about.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And if you look at, you know, it is true that California as a whole has lost some population. But again, if you dig into some of the regional markets, some of the places in Northern California and Eastern California definitely are seeing relatively large increases in population. So similar to a lot of places, maybe in the Northeast, a lot of the outflows are from the major metro areas and are to some of these secondary or tertiary cities that are a bit more affordable. James, I want to get back to what you're saying just about, you know, the West Coast in general, that you think it's going to bounce back, because that's a sort of a pretty significant thing if that happens. I wanted to sort of bolster what you said there based on something Henry and I heard yesterday or the other day when we talked to Lance Lambert, where he was saying that he felt that like the West Coast is sort of being generalized together, but he believes that there are certain markets that are like in a true correction crash, but markets like Seattle, LA, San Francisco are not them. It's like Boise, maybe Austin, I think you said Phoenix as well, are the ones that really sort of had this boom bust cycle, where he was predicting that some of the markets on the West Coast, on the actual coast, that are more used to really high prices are going to bounce back quicker, because it's not as different from the fundamentals of the last, you know, 5 to 10 years as like Boise and Austin, which have just become completely different places, basically.
Yeah. And I tend to agree with them. And, you know, just following these trends and in feeling the market activity, you know, I spent my time in SoCal and Seattle. Both markets are ripping right now, where, you know, they kind of settled down for a minute and now they are coming back and they're falling. I do think they're on a comeback. Like, you know, if you look at the median home pricing too from January 1 across all these cities to now, the median home price of the sales in January, like if we're looking, they're all 5 to 10% lower than they in January. And so they're trending up, days on markets are coming down. And so those are the trends we want to follow. Where's the activity? Where's the movement? And then where's the bodies? And in our showings, we're seeing massive amounts of people coming through again, 10, 20 people. Now, they're not fast to jump in, but the bodies are there. And if the bodies are there, consumptions are down. Also, the amount of sales are down 40%, but that's because inventory is down so much as well. And so all these things are turning in this mix of the money still on the West Coast. People are going to buy it, and it is making its little comeback right now, where I'm feeling it.
All right. You heard it here first. I'm with you.
I'll just follow up with what James just said. And gosh, so many people are sitting on the sidelines. And I just want to let you know that coming back from Texas and looking at the acquisitions we're doing there that are 30, 40, sometimes even 50% discounts from the prices that they were just a year ago, because these are distressed deals, obviously. These are not deals that a homeowner would buy. They're what an investor would buy. And the investor competition's not there because we're coming in with cash. But I don't think it's going to last much longer. So I can't emphasize enough, like, don't wait. Don't wait. The opportunities are there. It makes me sad for people that keep waiting, thinking there's going to be some kind of massive crash coming.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you all, James, Kathy, and Henry, for all of your research. I appreciate all of your insights and the time you've spent helping to educate our listeners about what is truly going on in the housing market. If anyone has questions about the region you studied or anything at all, where can they connect with you? Henry, let's start with you.
Yeah, best place to find me is on Instagram. I'm at the Henry Washington on Instagram.
James?
You can find me on Instagram at jdaneflips or jamesdaner.com.
And Kathy?
Instagram as well, at Kathy Fedke. And that's kind of a way to get through all the layers. If you go to realwealth.com, there's a whole bunch of people answering things for me, but you can get me directly on Instagram.
Nice. And I am at the Data Deli on Instagram. Thank you three so much. Thank you all for listening. We really appreciate it. We'll see you next time for On the Market.
On the Market is created by me, Dave Meyer, and Kaylin Bennett. Produced by Kaylin Bennett. Editing by Joel Esparza and Onyx Media. Research by Pooja Jindal. And a big thanks to the entire Bigger Pockets team. The content on the show On the Market are opinions only. All listeners should independently verify data points, opinions, and investment strategies.
There's a reason why small multifamily investing is so popular in the Bigger Pockets community. With just a 3.5% down payment, you can own up to 4 different units. Think about it. If you house hack and live in one of the units, you still have 3 different groups of tenants helping you pay down your mortgage each month, 4 kitchens and bathrooms you could renovate to increase your property value, 4 different Airbnbs, medium-term rentals, or other rental strategies you can try in one property, all in just one transaction. Of course, the question is, where do you find a small multifamily property you can afford? Which market and which deal is best for you? Once you close, how do you manage it, optimize it, keep scaling and living your life without being tied down by 4 leaky toilets or 4 fussy tenants? All great questions. All to be answered in the upcoming Small Multifamily Bootcamp with Chris Lopez and Lika Devatha. So, if you're serious about growing your portfolio with this highly efficient strategy, head to biggerpockets.com/4 today and join us in the Small Multifamily Bootcamp. That's biggerpockets.com/4. See you there.